dump this coke out. I don't know how much coke got dumped down there.
Unnecessary. A lot, huh?
A lot.
Shalon. He's gonna do really good. Talked to him last night for about 3 minutes.
Good. All right. Yeah.
Is three's probably enough, isn't it?
I don't know how long he talks to his girlfriend before we get included.
I'm guessing more than three.
We get. Oh, yeah. I gotta go. Sorry. They made it through the grenade training. Get through the.
All right, Commissioner. I'm ready.
It's a. All right, good morning. We'll go ahead and get started. Thank you all for attending. We'll get started with Luke's going to give us a prayer, and then Shalon's going to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our beloved Father in heaven, as we come before thee this morning, we give thanks for the many blessings that we have. We give thanks for the moisture that we've received in recent weeks, and we pray for more at this time, that we may receive rain and snow throughout this end of the winter season and spring season to help last us throughout the summer. We ask for guidance as we go through this meeting, and we ask a blessing and protection for our troops that are serving our country at this time. With all of the turmoil that our country is going through, we ask those that are afar and serving our nation at this time. We are grateful for all that thou has given us. We say these things in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Please follow me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so let's start off with approval of the minutes from February 9th meeting.
I'll move for approval of the minutes as constituted from the February 9th, 2026 meeting.
All those in favor?
You can second it.
Yeah, I'll second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, and we'll pay the claims approval. Take a motion for approval of claims for credit for payment from February 9th, 2026 to March 8th, 2026.
Move for approval of claims for payment from February 9th, 2026 to March 8th of 2026.
Second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Are we supposed to have Jeannie down here, or are we all right to keep rolling?
We're good.
It's all on YouTube. It's all getting recorded somewhere.
Jeannie is off today.
Okay. That just came to my attention. All right. Let's move into department reports. We'll start with Luke. And we'll notice that Commissioner Cousins isn't here today.
Okay. Good morning. In the auditor's office, the last few months have been super busy. Seems like this. After we prepare our budget, November, the 1st of December, we got a few weeks where it's not so crazy, and then January hits, and everyone's just has a lot going on. So the legislature session just ended on Friday, so we've been really busy with that, watching many bills, several projects going on in the county, and then year-end reports. There's a lot of those that we file. With the legislature, a few bills I wanted to mention that will affect the county and residents here. There's HB 41, so that's with the Wildland Urban Interface.
That took over HB 48, correct?
Yeah, so the WUI, it looks like all it basically did was change the date. So that fee for properties in the WUI for fire. That was delayed until 2027. It was supposed to start this year, and so that was pushed back a year.
Did it also give counties a voice in the map?
The mapping?
In the mapping, it gives counties an input into the map.
Okay.
I think
there's something that I read on that said they're looking for input, or counties had the
opportunity. Yeah, I think it also allowed the counties to have input on the fire map within their counties.
Yeah, I think we have to create our own map and then compare it to their map and give input somehow. I did talk with,
because their map sucks.
Yeah, Kendall and our new employee Bailey the other day about it, and they've been working on our map already. And mapping that so that the assessors can go and see which properties are in those areas, get the square footage on them, because that fee is based on square footage. And then eventually we'll put that onto the tax roll and put the fee on with the property taxes. So that's all kind of a process. I was glad they gave us another year to get all of those details and everything worked out. So another bill was SB 78. This was due with property tax abatements for veterans, low-income property owners. It actually failed the last day at about 11 o'clock that night. The House voted it down, so we were pleased with that. Most of the people I know, at least in our county, were still supporting that law to stay the same, and this would have taken away some of those benefits to
how those close people. Was that vote, do you know?
Not very.
Yeah, I think the House, it was about like 10-11 votes is how much it failed by in the House.
It was, I don't remember. There was much jubilation
on Friday night.
Yeah. Yeah, it was about 10 votes. So yeah, we were happy about that in my office. So that'll stay the same going forward. We'll see. Maybe next year they'll try something again. Last year it did pass the Senate and House, and then the governor vetoed it.
Right.
And so this year it passed the Senate, and then the House voted it down. I know there were a few other bills about data centers. There was one about regulating and reporting water use. So basically metering and then reporting how much water they're using to the state. And then other bills about taxes and tax incentives for data centers. This has been a huge topic across the state lately, and specifically in our county, as we had a hearing just last week on one with the Planning Commission. There are significant tax benefits to citizens. Data centers have large values of personal property, which personal property, when implemented into the property tax calculation, it doesn't create any new property tax growth. It just includes that value to reduce the current property tax rate. So there is a real benefit with property taxes and people that live here. I know there are other many concerns with data centers in regard to water, environmental issues, noise, and others. But just looking at the tax effects, it would have a major benefit to local taxpayers. In the next few months, we will be getting ready for our audit. So we've been doing some things already, but we have that. I think it's the second week of May is our audit with our outside auditors this year. So we'll be focusing on that and getting all of the year-end reports wrapped up and preparing the financial statements so that they're prepared for that time. So yeah, that's everything going on. Any questions or additional comments?
No, just thank you for your work, especially on SB 78.
Yeah,
you and Nicole.
Yeah,
it did a lot.
It ended up turning out good for us.
Turned out good for us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Luke. Shalon. Surprising.
Thanks.
Isn't that what you like?
Yeah. Yes. You love public speaking. Come on. The more the merrier.
So SB 78 was 28-41 with 6 absent. Yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Good. All right. So our overall budget is at 16%. Our culinary costs are $1.17.
Per meal per day.
Per meal.
That's incredible.
That's awesome, huh? Our culinary staff does, it's crazy what she's able to, what she's able
That's
to pull.
That's just incredible.
So, yep. It's been good, and she's been able to hold up for lots of years, even as the economy goes up and down. But, so, our daily population average is down. So I dug into it to try to figure out what was going on with it. Last year at this time in our first quarter, we had 461 bookings. Right now we're at 299. So, I mean, it's, I mean, we're just, the rest aren't coming in like they were last year. What we've, so our total today is 123. I'm going to talk about it further in when I talk about programming, about what we're going to try to do to bring our population up with our contract inmates. Our work crew still cooking. Deputy Groom retired on us last month, and so we're really sad about that. Deputy Sean Higgins is going to take his place, and he'll be awesome also. So we're looking forward to that. Right now we have four vacancies at the jail. We've hired 3 in this quarter. We've promoted 1 corporal. And as far as long-term leave, we do have just 1 FMLA, and then we, of course, with our, about a fifth of our staff is military, so we have had lots of military leave in the last little bit. Our planned projects, of course, is the Iron County Sheriff Complex planning. Our programming, so we... because our numbers are a little bit lower, Sheriff Carpenter asked me to ask the state if we could go up in 30 inmates. And I was going, oh, I don't know that our little jail will be able to do that, to just warehouse 30 state inmates. So we've been looking at a program that is a residential substance abuse program. So what that would mean is that if the state can provide us with those inmates, you have 24 inmates that all live together and they do a 9-month program. The good thing about that is that we make more money on a program state inmate versus just a regular state inmate. And so that would be beneficial to us. Also, with our growth with our new jail, the goal is to have inmates that have a purpose to be in our jail so that they're better behaved. If you're just warehousing inmates, they come with
baggage.
Yeah, they come with baggage. And if they have a reason to be there or a reason to wait for a program, then they're better behaved, which then for me, that makes a safer environment for my staff, better job satisfaction, and then we have better retention. So my goal has always been to have controlled growth in our current facility and especially in our new facility. And we do that by having these programs. And so we've been looking at this program. We're kind of new to it. The state's telling us that maybe by July we'd be able to do this program, which is so it could help our county inmates as well if we have somebody that gets sentenced for longer than the 9-month period. But for the majority, it would be state inmates, and they could all live together. And I do have the housing if I can have controlled growth versus inmates with baggage in our little facility. So I've got our All right, I've got our revenue 2026. It's fairly new, but on the back page of that, I have our 2025 revenue. So it looks really good. One of the spots I want to point out is our Social Security Administration total that's right down there at the bottom. That's money that our office manager found a few years ago. It's basically a finder's fee. If we let Social Security know we have these inmates, they give us this finder's fee, which ended up being $25,000 last year, which is, so kudos to her for doing that extra work to be able to just get a finder's fee and make us that much money. So that was good. That's all I got.
How many do you have at post right now?
We just have 1.
She's our medical gal. So she has been with us for about 9 months, and she was going through her advanced EMT course, and she graduated, and so then we shipped her up to post. We have three that should be in the next class.
Okay.
So just one right now.
Are we on?
Yeah.
Schedule for.
Yeah, so we have quite a few people in our background right now. We've been struggling on keeping them in our back background and not finding stuff that needs to kick them out. But yeah, we're on track. Post is letting us put three in the next class where they typically only let us have two.
When does that begin?
The 30th of March.
Did you have one move from medical to corrections or vice versa?
We had our maintenance. One of our line went to maintenance, and maintenance came back to the line.
Okay. I knew there was some in-house jockey, and I couldn't remember what it was to what it was.
Yep.
Very good.
Okay. Thank you
very much.
Yeah.
Let's see. Parks and Rec. Morning.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Good morning. Maria's throwing me into the water to learn. So I'm going to do the parks report today.
We can all learn together.
Yeah.
I've already screwed up today, so you're good to go, man.
Happens. Yeah. Anyway, parks, we're at 20% of our budget, so we're on track with that, where we want to be right now. Our revenue generated to date, $3,140 from our park reservation fees. Have no concerns with our budget to report at this time. We've got several events coming to our parks, which is always a good thing. Brings some good revenue to the county for us. The bigger ones we've got coming this year, we've got the We Rock Rock Crawling coming again. And then we've got the iCup Classic. That'll be a nice big event for us. We're not having the state championship cycling league race here this year, but we are going to have a regional race.
So you might not know the answer to this. How long? We lost that to St. George, is that correct?
Well, they're just rotating it around the state. They just don't want to do it.
So it's not a permanent deal. They're just rotating it around.
No, and they actually prefer our course out of any of them is what I've heard.
That's what I hear, too.
Yeah, we've just got the best facility for hosting that event in the state from what I've heard. I know Moab's working on a course out there that they're going to try to get it out that way. But as of now, we'll definitely stay in the rotation of that. We had it 2 years in a row.
How many are in the rotation?
I'm not sure.
You know, Maria?
I don't know. Do you know how? Which I would have thought they would have rotated it up north this year since they were here the last 2 years, but I guess they're going to St. George, but we'll take them whenever they're willing to come here. It's a great
all the event. Kids I talk to, they're like, no, ours is the best around.
And that's what I've heard too. And I've talked to some of the coaches and things, and yeah, they prefer our area, our course and just our facilities. Are able to handle that event well. We had a few kinks the first few years, but we've got it all worked out now, I believe. Thanks
to
Maria.
So we can still create that event just in a different name. It's not the finals. It's just everybody will come and compete here.
Well, it'll be the finals. This will just be a regional race.
I mean annually.
I don't think it'll be an annual event here, no.
Okay.
No, they'll just be rotating us through.
But didn't you say that we were still going to have
a regional race.
Oh, a regional. Okay. I misunderstood. All right.
Yeah. Oh, I guess I missed one of the regional races on here. I only saw one. And then we'll have the Cedar Half Marathon that starts at Woods Ranch, which that's always a good event. Typical summer games, having several summer games events. We got the RC Rock Crawl coming back this year. And then, so that's our events, some of our bigger events we've got coming in this year. As far as our parks go here, we've got Woods Ranch. I started working on clearing the northwest fence line. I'm going to extend that log fence I've been building up there to kind of close our boundary in, make it look a little nicer. There was no snow, so I worked on it this winter. It wasn't a typical winter. It was kind of strange to be working on that,
yeah.
You know, in February. Normally we would be buried. So once this little bit of snow that came in, I think it's pretty much about melted at this point. We'll just keep working on that. We're going to have our opening date at June 1st again. We did that last year. In the past, we had it on May 1st. We did that for a couple reasons, to offset heavy snow loads, which obviously won't matter this year, and then to offset it from 5 mile opening on May 1st, so we don't have them both opening the same weekend, where that 5 mile park's at a little lower elevation. So as soon as I can get in there, you know, by June 1st, I'll get the water up and going and get the park ready to go. Last year, we did have several of groups come in May still, knowing that we didn't have water and things yet. 5 mile, just on Thursday, and I believe Thursday, they Spencer called. They got the rest of the piles burned up there, the slash piles that we had made. And then a couple weeks previous to that, Lucas had gone up and burned the first half. And so they've got those burned, so that's a huge help to get rid of all that extra material out of there and clean the park up. The Forest Service came in and did a vegetation treatment project that included the entire Bowery Creek all the way up to Yankee. And in our park specifically, they removed all the Russian olive, which was kind of our border along the front there on that north fence. So we're working with the Forest Service and Parowan City. Forest Service is going to replant that for us, hopefully this spring. And Parowan's going to give us access to that water that comes down that irrigation pipeline that comes down the canyon. Dan Jessen's going to work with me on that, on getting us water out of that. So we're working on that. We've got a meeting actually this afternoon with the Forest Service. And seasonal preparations obviously will take place prior to our opening date of May 1st. Three Peaks. We've got a bunch of slash piles still out there. They didn't get to it last year. We're hoping that we'll get moisture conditions right, that they can get out there. They talked about just taking a truck out there and just watching those with a truck to get it done. So they said we're on number one on their priority list now that they've got all their mountain burning done, and it doesn't look like we're going to get any more snow. And let's see. Yeah, and then we'll get the water turned on out at Three Peaks before Easter. That's pretty typical what I do out there. Shooting range. We are waiting on the BLM. Brooklyn Cox is working on that. We had the boundary all figured out, but then she said she would. She wants to get it on a section line rather than cutting the section, you know, cutting it the parcel in half. She's going to work on getting it to a section line. We'll have a meeting coming up with them, the coordinating meeting on the 23rd with the BLM. So we're kind of up in the air on that, just waiting for them to decide exactly how they want to do that so we can fence in that extension on the south to help with the ricochets and things, make that a little safer out there. As far as splitting up the group shooting range, so far that seems to be a good thing. We're getting use out there on both sides of it, and it seems to be doing good so far.
It's good.
So, and then, yeah, it's been an interesting winter. Been out doing a lot of projects that we typically wouldn't do in the wintertime.
What are you going to do all summer?
We've got plenty of stuff to do this summer. Oh, there's always stuff to do. It's never ending. But other than that, that's it for parks, unless you guys have any questions or comments.
I don't think so.
Hey,
thanks. No, good job.
Thank you.
We get a lot of compliments. It's all because of you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
No complaints, ever.
All right, next is Sheriff. Thank you.
Drop the gun. Sheriff, thank you. Oh, yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Give John just a second to pull up my PowerPoint presentation here. Go ahead and go to the next slide, John. Thanks. So under some of our current law enforcement issues, this is kind of a funny year. Shalom was talking about how our bookings are down, and you'll see that in the stats here in just a minute. But our SWAT calls are up. So far this year to date, we've had seven call-outs year to date. Or last year we had about 23 or 24 for the entire year. So, you know, we've had quite a bit, three in one weekend here not too long ago. So, you know, we do still have a lot going on in the county, but nationally, crime is down. Homicides are down across the nation, lowest as in 40 or 50 years. So there's some good indicators that way. The Drug Task Force is still very active. They recently served a warrant with the Orange County, with DEA, and recovered a wide variety of drugs and guns in that search warrant. With the Orange County Sheriff's Office, relationship with Washington County Task Force and Bomb Squad, we've got our second certified explosive detection dog now. And you know, the day after it got certified, it went and did a sweep for SU, for especially event over there. So, you know, again, just an important force multiplier for our community. Go to the next slide there, John. Here's our stats. And I probably should have left last year's total stats on so you could have had a little bit better view of where we are in relation to last year. But We're really down in almost every crime category this year, which is interesting, and that's a good thing. That's a very positive thing. Total for our total reports so far this year is 1,289 reports so far year to date. Our next, RIMIN is a part of the RIS. RIS is the Regional Information Security System. It's the longest running program in the nation that has been funded through grants through Congress. It's been about 53 years now. RIS is divided up into regions. Our region is the Rocky Mountain Information Network, which covers the eight Rocky Mountain states. And this is an important program for us because they do a lot for us as far as things like deconfliction. So if DEA is getting ready to serve a warrant in our area, they can enter that information into the deconfliction database, and our task force and law enforcement agencies can see if it's conflicting with anything that we've got going on so that we can coordinate that and make sure we don't ever have blue-on-blue type incidents. They also do ATLs and different things, so if there's a homicide in Oregon, for example, and they have ties to Utah or may have to go through Utah to get to someplace else where they may have ties, they'll send out ATL information with photographs, photographs of suspect vehicles, all the information that they have so that our officers and deputies can be informed about what is that's going on and who they may come in contact with out on our in our communities and roads. This is important. I sit on the committee. I'm one of two members on the committee for Utah. Myself and the Director of Public Safety sit on that committee to represent all Utah law enforcement agencies for RIMIN. And we had the opportunity of going back to Washington, D.C. here about 3 weeks ago and meet with our congressional leaders to try to help maintain their funding. And it looks very positive. It looks like they're going to maintain the funding. Part of the reason this one's so important for us is because they give us technological type things that we otherwise wouldn't be able to afford. So, for example, on our last homicide, we were able to take the cell tower information, download that, send it down to Rimmon, and they were able to take the suspect phone number and show where they picked up the victim, followed them out to the site of the shooting, and then returned back to their home. So it helps give us some really good technical evidence of what's going on. And they've done other things for us, officer-involved shootings. They've been able to slow down our camera, body camera footage, and show that the suspect fired two rounds at our deputies before our deputies ever returned fire. That's important, is that it shows what actually transpired, and it really helps us in our credibility in front of the public to be able to show this is what actually took place, and there's no question about the order of things and the use of force. TDA is a gang that's also been listed as a terrorist organization. This one's a particular concern to us because, according to the Border Patrol, Denver and Salt Lake are their two major hubs of drug activity. And so, you know, we're always very concerned with that and about the trafficking of drugs within Utah and how that could affect our communities. So something that we watch very closely. Another thing that they do is what's called jackpotting, which is where they'll go to, they especially like credit unions in rural areas because they don't think that they have the same security as big bank type ATMs. And they'll post armed guards around it and then use somebody to hack into the ATM machine to rob the ATM machine. And they've got as much as $100,000 out of a single ATM in the past. So it's something that we're aware of and that we watch. And it's been interesting because it's begun to gain more national notoriety. So it's definitely something that's spreading, something that all law enforcement agencies need to be aware of and watch for. Another one that we're always concerned about is frauds in our community. And one of the big frauds that's been taking place here in Iron County is suspects calling potential victims and identifying themselves as a deputy from the sheriff's office and telling them that they have a warrant out for their arrest and that they need to stay on the phone with them and that they need to pay them with, Amazon music cards or whatever it is. Well, you know, this is something we want people to be sure they understand, is that is not how any law enforcement agency works. Okay? We do not call people and ask for payment via Amazon gift cards. So if anybody tries to tell you that, that is absolutely a fraud. Hang up on them. Call us. Let us help you. But please be aware of that, that's something that's going on. And sometimes they actually use names of deputies that actually work for me. So
is it local calls or is it from who knows?
Well, we don't know. That's part of the problem is a lot of those calls, they may show up with a 435 area code, but they're spoof calls. And so part of the difficulty is being able to track where those calls are actually coming from.
We actually had one of our employees here get one of those calls about a month ago, and they were keeping them on the phone, and we encountered this employee and
mid fraud call.
And she's like, oh, here. And so I said, I got her phone and I'm like, no, this is a fraud. Hang up. And they lashed out with a bunch of curse words and then hung up. So yeah,
and that's pretty typical.
Yeah, I've had several people call me that not stereotypical people that you would think might fall for that, but call with, they're like, I didn't fall for it, but is there any truth to it? Because I really want to be respectful to the sheriff's office. And so, they're like, the sheriff's office has such a good reputation that they're like, man, is it or isn't it? But
Yeah, and
luckily, I don't know anybody that has succumbed to it.
Well, and that's the whole point, is that, you know, we'll make sure that, I mean, we can run a person's name and tell them absolutely whether they have a warrant or not, and how to deal with that. But, you know, if a warrant, if you actually have a warrant and it's a high dollar warrant, then, you know, a deputy or an officer is probably going to show up on your doorstep and take you into custody and bring you down for the warrant. A lot of times, if they're lower dollar warrants that people can pay at the time, we'll invite them to come down to the jail and pay that warrant at the jail, and just they'll just be released with the payment of the warrant without ever being arrested. So, you know, that's how warrants are dealt with. They're not dealt with through Amazon gift cards or any other type of nonsense. We don't do it over the phone. It's never done over the phone. You know, so if somebody gets a fraud call like that, just hang up on them, call us. You know, like I say, we can go ahead and run your name and make sure that you don't have a warrant. And if you do, then we can tell you how to go ahead and appropriately take care of that. You know, so, you know, please don't think that we're, you know, waiting in the bushes to jump you if you don't pay with your Amazon gift cards. So let's go to the next slide. Youth homes continues to be an issue, you know, and I feel bad for the employees of these youth homes, because they're as frustrated as we are with it, but it continues to be a pretty large problem for us. And in some ways, it's got a little bit better. The first number is year-to-date stats this year. The second number was our total numbers from last year. So far this year, 17 assaults, only 5 runaways, which is amazing. Only 2 sex offenses, which is, again, amazing. One of them that's been really concerning, though, is the suicidals. We're up. We've had 6 suicidal youths so far this year, where we only had 4 last year total for the entire year. So, you know, again, some things that are pretty concerning about some of these youth homes. And sometimes they're fairly easy to handle and fairly quick, but sometimes it eats up a lot of deputy time, a lot of investigative time, costs quite a bit. So far this year, total hours is 118 hours. That's about $8,850 of sheriff's office budget going to dealing just with group homes. The total last year was $54,247.50. We still have 2 cases that are ongoing. And last year we spent about 18 weeks of deputy time dedicated to dealing with problems with youth homes. So far this year it's been about 2.95 weeks.
So can we address that? When I had security at my old employer, if my alarm went off, then I had police respond. Like the first 2 were free, but after that, then we started getting charged.
Right, and this is part of the problem that we're trying to find what the right solution is because we're being told that we can't do anything through DOPL. You know, we've talked about whether there's things that the commission can do as far as zoning and whatnot, but it seems to be a problem where nobody's really been able to give us an answer as to what we can or can't do.
So is this something that we could have Rex and...
And that may be...
Well, So at the beginning of this, I addressed that. There's not any... There isn't any appetite at the legislative level
to support it?
No. It's something... In fact, so we've had this conversation now. I'm gonna send you guys an email right now just to... Let's get together. We talked about it kind of before the legislative session and said after legislative session when we're not running around with our hair on fire. So I'm drafting an email right now while I remember to, as county staff, to let's set up a meeting and talk about what we can do locally.
I think that's what it kind of comes down to, though, is until you go after the investors that are investing in these homes, until you're able to make it painful for them, then nothing's going to really change.
And well, like I would posit that
if they're under a conditional use permit, maybe we explore the conditions of that conditional use permit and pull it if they're not meeting those.
And that's been our conversation.
Yeah,
is that might be our best option.
The employees are just as frustrated.
Right. They're
a lot of times they're the ones that are being assaulted.
They're a college kid that's sitting overnight and
yeah.
Right.
So
well, and it's inundating Work Med. You know, they're everyday Work Med, Intermountain. Not as much the ICU, but I mean they're every time one of these hat pops off on the law enforcement side, it ends up with multiple emergency or multiple injuries into Work Med,
right?
As well,
or the ER if it's after hours.
It's just a chain reaction.
Yeah, it is. So, our current strength of patrol. Currently, we're up to strength. We've got three in post, with one getting ready to start the LEO portion. He's already completed the special functions officer. So once the three that are currently in post are currently in the SFO block. Once they all move to the LEO block, then the fourth one will be joining them for the LEO block to complete it. We just had one deputy that just graduated from post and is currently in FTO. As far as our canines, we retired a patrol drug dog here a few months ago. We just replaced that dog, and it's just been certified as a narcotic detection dog. It's still in the patrol and tracking portion of its training, but can at least be used for drugs right now. We replaced our single-purpose drug dog in the jail that helps us keep drugs out of the jail. So that one's just been replaced, and we received our second explosive detection dog on a grant. And that one has just been certified and is at work. As you know, the sheriff's complex is going up. Its completion date is still slated for July of 2027, and it's going together well. So we appreciate all the good work that's going on with that. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
I interrupted you and asked them all during your presentation.
Yeah, me too. I got my questions out.
That's all right. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sheriff.
All right, Maria.
So we're going to do things a little different today. I decided that I needed to prepare more of like an annual report for you and to kind of build some understanding as to what it is that we're doing. We know there's a lot of people. We just did a survey about our office, and we're realizing that people don't understand the role of our office entirely. So we're going to kind of start addressing that a little bit better as we move forward. So I will go and get copies of this for you, but we'll just follow along with the presentation for right now. So just starting out, I know you guys that you understand, but maybe not everybody in the audience understands who we are and what we do. So we're Visit Cedar City Bryan Head. We're the Visitors Bureau for the county. We're the official marketing and development office. We utilize tourism taxes to engage in development and marketing strategies to improve Iron County's visitor economy. So go ahead. So in terms of the tourism-related taxes, so these are the taxes that come into the county. So we have the TRT, which is the transient room tax, which is the lodging tax, and the TRCCA, which is the tourism, recreation, cultural, and convention, and airport tax. Nice, long title there. That's that 1% tax on restaurants. And we had an interesting thing happen with that during the session. But the taxes... just so you know, TRT was up or was down slightly from the year prior. That's okay.
Getting jumpy over here.
You're so jumpy. And we think that's because of in December, for whatever reason, it wasn't as high as it usually is. And then in January of this year, the collection was more than double. So we think there was a glitch there in the tax commission, or just a glitch in the terms of the reporting. But sadly, that does affect our budget because we are based on our annual revenue. So that was a little frustrating, but we'll deal with it. But the nice thing was is restaurant tax was up about 10%. So our goals and objectives are pretty simple. Our primary goal is to increase the economic impact of travel in Iron County, and second is to strengthen the Visit Cedar City brand. Our objectives are to inspire awareness and interest in Iron County leisure, sports, and business visitation. Prioritize quality visitation, length of stay, and higher spend by those visitors. Distribute visitation throughout the year and midweek, and encourage visitor planning and preparation so that we're hopefully not having to bring out the search and rescue to rescue our visitors, which does happen, as our sheriff knows. So our areas of focus, go ahead and change. So are to support events and invest in an infrastructure enhancements. So supporting events is like our investments in like Shakespeare, Summer Games, July Jamboree, you name it. And then to invest in infrastructure enhancements. That's the things that we need in terms of tourism, but also locals can enjoy. That's trails. That's buildings. That's, theaters. It's, the things that are needed in order for us to have a good product for visitors to enjoy. We also engage in consumer marketing and group tribal trade efforts. And we also pitch and host journalists and influencers to generate earned and shared media. So that's to create a buzz without having to pay for advertising, to bring awareness, keep us top of mind. And it's like third-party endorsement. So it's like journalists, it's influencers, people who are out there talking about our destination. Go ahead. So just here's where those tourism taxes are being invested. So $625,000 was in supporting events and tournaments. This is investment over the 2 years, so 2025, and what's going to be invested this year. $1.4 million in tourism, recreation, cultural, and airport improvements. So like the Shakespeare Festival, the Green Show, we're doing some improvements there. The Iron West Sports Complex, we're building a restroom, helping them build their restroom and improving their parking lot. We put in light bases for them. The golf course is getting a new restroom because of these taxes. And the Iron Hill Skills Park was built with help of these taxes. $1 million was invested in the Cross Hollow Event Center expansion. It's open for the most part. We should be doing a grand opening on that. And then $2.75 million will be invested over the next couple of years into the SU multi-purpose building to improve the opportunities for us to host more sports tournaments here in Iron County. So about $5.75 million invested. Go ahead. Okay, that is a video, if you could hit that.
Let's see if we can make it go.
Hopefully it won't.
Oh. Where sports and adventure take center stage.
So this is an example of an ad that we ran during the Olympics. So utilizing what we do with TRT, which is supposed to be spent on advertising, that was an ad that we placed during the Olympics for Olympic coverage. It's also an ad that we're running on KSL during the sports show when they talk about high school sports. We'll update this ad as we get out of winter into the spring and more kind of an evergreen aspect. So that it's focusing on what we have to do here in terms of the visit, like what we love people to come and visit, but we also are emphasizing some of the sports aspect. Here's another example.
Thank you.
that's just an example of we take a weather event, which was 5 feet of snow in Bryan Head, and turn it into a moment that we can put out there to generate interest and, you know, get people excited about snow because it finally came. These are examples of some of the advertising that we've been doing. These are examples of like digital ads, Facebook ads. This bottom one is a billboard that we did in cooperation with Bryce Canyon Country. So it's a kind of an itinerary-based campaign where we encourage people to spend a day and a half skiing in Bryan Head, and then it's a day and a half seeing Bryce Canyon Country. So the billboard, and it's combined with like a digital campaign, so people are encouraged to go to this landing page and they learn more about skiing and seeing in southern Utah. But I love this. I love it because it's a cooperative campaign with another county, so it has more reach and more of a, you know, a broader attraction. Go ahead. These are our examples of how we utilize journalists and influencers and media to generate interest in our area. These are just examples of some of the ads, some of the articles and things that have been written about us just in the last little bit. Go ahead. So the visitor economy by the numbers. So this is based on 2025. So last year we had, I guess, again, we do all this to generate people to come here. And so here's the results. 3.8 million visitors annually. So it is, that visitation is slightly down from the year prior. Those visitors resulted in, we were able to see 890,000 overnight visitors, so generating more of the TRT tax, which resulted into 2 million visit nights. The visit nights are actually up this year. The spending that takes place from these visitors resulted in $250 million into our local area. This is spending over dining, lodging, gas, groceries, sporting equipment, entertainment, and recreation. That doesn't account for the trickle-down effects of that spending. So when those dollars are spent, other things come into play in terms of wages, employers, businesses, who are then taking those dollars and then reinvesting them in our community in terms of wages, profits, groceries, utilities, construction, and real estate. Tourism results in 3,125 direct jobs. So it's employing our kids and our SUU students. It provides skill building and core life skills like communication, conflict resolution, and customer service. It's typically hospitality and tourism jobs is where people start their careers and then go on and build their skills. why this matters? Next one. So that spending equals $42 million in state and local tax revenue, which is then invested in schools, police, transportation, roads, recreation, and things that create the quality of life. Tourism spending basically provides $1,200 in tax relief for every Utah home, basically meaning because people come in here and spend dollars, that's $1,200 in tax relief that our Utah residents don't have to, you know, put out for the very same services. So, next one. So basically, you know, it does make life better. And as you deal with your constituents and if people kind of ask you what they think about tourism, a recent study by Kempsey Gardner in terms of the resident sentiment towards tourism, 79% of Iron County residents believe tourism is important to the local economy. So they support what we're doing. So that is all I have for this one. Any questions?
Thank you for what you do.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. I talk to Maria daily.
Daily?
I don't have any questions, but she's a rock star.
And Woman of the Year.
Woman of the Year, yes. I was remiss by mentioning.
All right, thank you, everybody. We'll go to commission reports. If you want to go ahead and go,
yeah, I'm gonna race through. I'm gonna hit the highlights. I was looking at what we've done, and you know, I'm gonna hit the highlights. We've been working with our local fire departments to change their response area maps. The reason that matters with the commission is because the fire department, we pay Cedar City Iron County Fire Department based on rooftops and taxable value. And when we change those borders, that could change that fee structure. So that's why we have been involved in that. I'd like to thank the Iron County Livestock Association, Southern Utah Livestock Association, for hosting the annual Lincoln Day Dinner at the Elks Lodge this year. We got a really good update from Congresswoman Malloy and Reg Johnson from the State Department of Natural Resources on, you know, feed and policies and things like that. It was really helpful. I had the opportunity, along with the other two commissioners, to attend the National Association of County Legislative Conference in Washington, D.C. Specifically, there I serve on the Justice and Public Safety Committee. This year we were able to, what we do is we analyze policy, vote on resolutions that we believe are important to take to our national legislators. This year was a lot of focus on wildland fire. So our local fire departments, volunteer fire departments, have an opportunity to send personnel and equipment out on major wildland fires. And we actually collect a lot of money doing that. They pay our firefighters, but they also pay, I guess you'd call it, rent on fire equipment. The equity, the rates that are paid to local fire departments were not equitable across the board. So we worked on a resolution that would actually help bring that rate up, so when our local fire department deploys to these fires nationally, that the rates are fair. That's going to be a big boost for our volunteer fire departments. We also worked on a resolution just to make emergency response more safe in big incidents with wildland fire, to require the use of the chain of command and incident, and the use of the incident command system, so everybody's coordinated. There, people get into these big situations, and sometimes they kind of go off willy-nilly. So we worked on a resolution. I want to talk just a little bit about a wildland fire resolution that we brought forward that I was involved in last year with this board that's actually moved to Congress and has bipartisan support and will be signed into law. And I'd like to thank Congresswoman Malloy's office. It's a wildland fire compensation bill. So wildland firefighters get paid for hazard pay when they go out on things. There was a loophole in there that says that if it's a prescribed burn, you don't get hazard pay. Which means, so if you remember the Beaver Fire last year that burned, I don't remember how many thousands of acres. We actually had one death of a firefighter on that fire. But because it was started as a prescribed burn, nobody got hazard pay on that fire, including that also affects the benefits of that firefighter that lost his life. So we introduced legislation. Congresswoman Malloy's office drafted that and ran with that. And it's actually scheduled to be heard in the House of Representatives this year with bipartisan support. So we look forward to that law being changed, and that resolution, that law generated really out of here in Iron County. So just an example of why that's important that we do that. and I've talked about this before, but we've talked about, so a couple of years ago, the legislature gave Iron County, counties in general, the responsibility of overseeing EMS contracts, making sure that we have adequate emergency medical service in our community. I had an opportunity to meet with the owner of Gold Cross Ambulance, talked about what we're doing to bolster those services here in Iron County. They're doubling the size, not doubling the size, but just adding more living space to the Parowan station so that they can accommodate two full-time crews and two full-time ambulances out of the Parowan station. That's a really big deal because especially during ski season in Bryanhead, there's an ambulance in Bryanhead several times a day, which really takes away the service for the northern end of the county because they're tied up with Bryanhead. So this will allow for a second crew, full-time crew, and a second ambulance here in Parowan to cover the north end of the county, which it's a really big deal. Cedar City is also going to expand their station, add another full-time truck and crew in Cedar City. They've also purchased property on the south end of town. They've purchased 66 acres. They're going to move their maintenance facility and their southern region administrative facility there, along with staffing a truck on the south end where the growth, you know, the growth in Iron County is. Those all come from discussions that we initiated to try and better the service. I'm really grateful for Gold Cross to stepping up to the plate and addressing those issues almost immediately. We saw construction start. We had the opportunity to host the Grand County, some of their commissioners and sheriff. They're interested in building a new jail. They came and toured our facility, and we said, these are the mistakes we made. Please learn from our mistakes so that you can jump ahead in the process. I want to thank John Groom. Retired from our Iron County Jail. After 20 years of service, John was the coordinator of the work crew. He served a very honorable career and did us a fantastic job. I'm really proud of John for being able to hit that mark and be smart enough to move on. So congratulations to him and wish him well. We've met with Iron County School District to collaborate on some facility usage. That's an ongoing thing. Met with a potential energy company and partners to work through the details of a potential new industrial park and energy generation facility. One thing I want to mention really quick, if you remember back, beginning of the winter, we have a position that the county funds partially with wildland fire through the county. There was, with some state regulation, it was apparent that they were going to lay this employee off for the winter, and then we would pick him back up in the summertime, unless the county agreed to step in and pay his wages through these winter months, and we agreed to do that. I met with that employee the other day to find out how that went. That resulted in several hundred linear miles of roadside clearing of weeds, fire mitigation, things like that. So that really paid off for us. That's it in a nutshell. How's that? I don't want to.
A month and.
I don't want to prolong this.
Yeah. Yeah, we're past time, so I'll hustle too. Just a couple things. Mike touched on a lot of the joint meetings that we were able to attend. But I was able to. We were able to deliver a letter to the Department of Transportation through the Iron County Livestock Association supporting the trails that are. That run throughout the county that are historical trails, livestock trails for moving up and down the mountain. We're getting some pushback from DOT on that. So John did a really good job at drafting a letter, and we were able to present that to them. I was able to attend the Lincoln Day dinner that Mike mentioned. That was very, very good to have the representation that we have locally on the state and the national level. So that's always cool to see that we have that local representation. Also had a road meeting with the Forest Service talking about maintenance of the roads and the split between the county and the Forest Service in Forest Service areas. Utah State University had their extension meeting and presented what their services are to the county and how the county supports them in that. Then Grand County commissioners were here, a visit to Washington, D.C. for the National Association of County meetings. Very, very good opportunity. Attended a lot of meetings with Public Lands, Forest Service, BLM, Natural Resources, but one of the most interesting things was with the Forest Service, the contract that the governor of Utah has signed with the Forest Service, where they are going to turn over some of the management of the Forest Service areas to the state. And I pressed him on that, and I said, what does that mean? I want to quantify that for me. What does that really mean? And he didn't have a great answer. So today we'll have another meeting on that and try to figure out what that means, because the prospects of that are going to be awesome, I believe, if that comes to fruition. So really excited about that. Also, we had a meeting with our both state senators and all our state representatives in the Capitol building. It was a good opportunity to sit and visit with them and hear what they're working on and hear what they want from us and what we want them to work on. That was the same day as the State of the Union, so we ran a little long, and they said, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Get out. Kind of chased us out of the building, so that was interesting. But and then I was able to attend the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting on Thursday night, where they talked about the data center, and that was presented by Brett. And you know, he introduced it as an opportunity to hear from the community, and there was a lot of comments that were made. There have been no decisions made on that. There are some very big concerns that I have on that, and everybody that I've spoke to in the county has on that. They're manageable, and there's issues that I think we can work through and look forward to doing that with public input. I was also able to, while I was in D.C., I attended one of the meetings that discussed data centers and what they actually bring to the community and the money that they can provide to the community. So that was interesting to hear from them. So
that was a good meeting. That was kind of put things in perspective.
Yeah, there's
for sure.
There's a lot of speculation, and it's good to boil that down to what's reality.
Yeah, and I think moving forward, I think you'll see a lot of public, hopefully some public education. Because there are a lot of misconceptions. There's a lot of legitimate concerns.
Right.
But technology today is not what it was in the past.
So with that, we'll take a 10-minute break and we'll start back up at 10:20. All right, we'll get started back up. Thank you, everybody, for attending. We'll start with number one, a public hearing discussion, possible approval of a proposed zone change, ordinance 2026-5 to the Iron County zoning map, zone change from R5 residential 5 acre to R1/2 residential 1/2 acre on approximately 73.6 acres, generally located on the south side of the Mid Valley Road near 2700 West and 2800 West, Cedar City, Utah. Applicant is Cedar Green Holdings, presented by Brett Hamilton.
Good morning, Commissioners. So a lot of the details I think we went through there, but this just kind of visually represents and shows the location of the proposed project. South side of Mid Valley Road, east of Lund Highway. Here's an aerial of the site, 73.6 acres again, located next to Sage Meadows and Peak View. Go ahead, John. And then this just shows the Tier 2 boundary. So you can see there to the east, you've got the Enoch city limits as well as the Tier 2 boundary, which also lines up with their annexation boundary. And then on the south side there, there's that red line that shows Cedar City's annexation boundary. So this area here is within the Tier 2, but also not within either Enoch or Cedar's annexation boundary. Current zoning again on the property is residential 5 acre. And the proposed zoning on it, go ahead, John, is the R-half. So as you can see, there's R-half zoning to the north, to the east, to the south, and also on the west side of Lund Highway. So we felt like, you know, with this proposed change, it kind of was in line with what's happening in that community with the smaller lot sizes. So obviously with any proposed rezone, there's those 13 evaluation criteria that we go through that are part of the considerations. And so a couple of the big ones, especially when it comes to any lot, you know, less than 5 acres, is really do they have the capacity for water and sewer? You know, we're not, obviously we don't want them on septic if they're less than the 5 acre lot. So here's the water slide showing that there is the water slide. showing that there is a water line within Mid Valley that they could tie into. And then on the next slide here, we've got sewer infrastructure. So they're looking at, you know, what could potentially be, you know, the most feasible option just based on, you know, the topography and whether or not it's better to go to the west to the 4500 line or, you know, to the east to the 2300 line. So at this point, they're not proposing to do any development for the project. Essentially, what they're looking to do is more to do a minor lot subdivision. And I actually think I popped it in on the next one here. So this shows the transportation plan, just showing, you know, Lund and Mid Valley both as 100-foot right-of-way arterials. But then on this next slide here, it does show, yeah, this one here, that this is what they would like to do. So basically a minor lot subdivision. And in order to do this configuration of the lots, there was the need to change the zone because that larger parcel one, is about 13 acres. They're proposing to piece that off so that it can be developed with a school. And then the remainder, about 60 acres, that would just remain undeveloped at this point in time. They don't have any plans. But there's only 175 foot of frontage on that lot, and the R5 zone requires 300 feet of frontage. So really that was kind of the main reason for the zone change. The school is allowed in either zone, R5 or R-half, so it really just came down to, you know, the school wanted more frontage because it makes more sense, especially with school pickups and drop-offs, to have more frontage to be able to accommodate that. So it leaves 175 feet, which is... The R-half zone only requires 120 feet of road frontage. So that would leave enough space to provide a roadway coming into the site in the future, as well as, you know, maybe a few lots coming in off that road. So that's just obviously for reference there of what they wanted to do with that zone change. But again, there's those 13 evaluation criteria that we looked through and that were included in that staff report for you, just kind of going through how we feel like it meets those different 13 criteria. But I think that's it for it. So Any questions for me before we go into a public hearing?
No.
Okay, thank you.
So we'll declare a public hearing open. Anybody wishing to speak to this can step forward and state your name and come to the microphone.
Yes, hi, Brigham Ashton. I own the property just to the west of here. And so many years ago when we purchased that property with the, you know, the thought that maybe we'd put it into some orchards or right now we run some cattle on it. We have the neighbor there that runs his cattle on it. But we also recognize the value of good development, the value of bringing community together. So with that said, our intent now is shifting to where we're also looking at, have spoken to some of our engineers about what we can do to enhance that area and develop it. So we'd just respectfully also consider what if we were to come in and request that same zone to bring that whole area in. So just one of the thoughts. Of course, we know we have to go through that process, but would certainly be interested in that as well. So.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll close the public hearing. Brett, you're good to...
Yeah, no, nothing else unless there's any questions on anything.
Okay, no. Entertain a motion.
All right, I would move to approve Zone Change Ordinance 2026-5 to the Yan County Zoning Map Zone Change from R5 Residential 5 Acre to R1/2 Residential Half Acre on approximately 73.60 acres, generally located in the south side of Mid Valley Road near 2700 West and 2700 West and 2800 West. Okay. That didn't make sense, but now it does. I had to process that. That's my motion.
Second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, agenda item number 2 is public comments for items that are not on the agenda. We invite anybody to step forward. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes and be polite and address the board. Seeing none.
There is one.
Oh.
Casey Anderson, I just wanted to thank you guys for the work that you're doing on the data center. I was not able to be at that meeting. I showed up and there was a really long line, and I've got kids at home to watch, so wasn't able to be there for that. But thank you for the work that you're doing on that. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any others? Okay, we'll close the public hearing. Go on to agenda item number three. Request to waive the application fee for a proposed zoning district map amendment for a 15.58 acre property located at the southwest corner of 2200 South and 2200 West. Perwin, presented by Brett.
So I think maybe a couple more here, John. Okay. All right. So the applicant for this item is the Kenneth H. Adams Living Trust. So that's the owners of the property, Representative Ray Adams, as well as Marcy Griffiths. So again, the request is for a waiver of the zoning map amendment application fee. So the subject property is 15.58 acres. The application fee is $250. So this piece of property was part of a larger effort by the county to change zoning around Parowan and Paraguna. So it was done in February of 2025. So this property at that time was zone commercial, and it was changed to residential 5 acre. So really the application that they've submitted is just to revert back to that commercial zoning that they had previously. So the request to waive the fee, if you want to go ahead to the next one here, John. So really the purpose of the fee is really just to offset some of the costs, you know, associated with processing the application. So staff review time, noticing that needs to be done for both the Planning Commission and the Commission, And again, all those public hearings. So really it just helps to ensure that there's no subsidizing, you know, of applications, development applications coming in. And then I think there's a few questions I just put down here. So really, when it comes to fee waiver requests, it's obviously good to figure out, okay, have we done this in the past? Is this something that, you know, historically we've seen happen? And then would approving the waiver create expectations for others, you know, that may be in a similar situation? So obviously when we do these county zone changes, it obviously impacts, you know, hundreds of probably properties. And so that's just something to consider when you're looking at any type of fee waiver. Is there going to be that expectation for the next person that says, hey, you know, I felt like I was maybe treated unfairly on the zone change. I didn't like the change. You know, so that's something to consider. I do know that there's at least one other person who's in a similar situation who the county had changed their property about a year ago or so, and they're looking to submit an application as well to change back. So something to consider.
Ken? So were these the changes with the tier?
Yep. So when the tier boundary changes and the zone changes, yeah, when those were all done together.
Yeah, so I've worked on this a bunch. This was a case where the Adams family prior generation had purchased this property for a commercial use. That's always been the intent. When the tier change went into effect, it changed that property. They were not aware of that change until that came up. I feel like this is an appropriate request just because of the specifics in this case. I would certainly not throw out a blanket caveat that this is something that we would do. Obviously, it needs to be a case-by-case basis, but in this particular case, I'm comfortable with it.
So do we need to have a public hearing before a vote?
No.
This one. Just
entertain a motion then.
I would move to waive the application fee for proposed zoning district map amendment for 15.58 acres, property located at the southwest corner of 200 South, 2200 West in Parowan, Utah.
Second that motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Agenda item number 4. Review and consider adoption of a corrective ordinance amendment to address a clerical omission in Ordinance 2026-2. The proposed amendment restores the definition of a vehicle storage lot as originally presented on January 26, 2026, and does not introduce new regulatory standards or modify the substance of the Commission's prior legislative action as a corrective clarification consistent with a previously approved ordinance. Additional public notice and hearing are not required.
All right, so this one, I kind of put it all in the agenda item there, but this is one where, again, when it was presented to both Planning Commission and County Commission, it was specifically at the January 26th County Commission meeting, both the staff reports, so all the written stuff that you had, and in the presentation that we provided, it included all the definitions, including the vehicle storage lot. But for whatever reason, I just didn't get that vehicle storage lot definition into the ordinance itself. So we just wanted to bring that back just as a kind of a clerical amendment on that. And again, you know, no noticing or public hearing required on it since, you know, we already have done all that. That was the intent. So really it's just to formalize that so that we can have that updated ordinance with the definition of vehicle storage lot included. So any questions on that?
No.
Nope. So I entertain a motion.
So I would move for the adoption of a corrective ordinance amendment to address a clerical omission in Ordinance 2026-2. The proposed amendment restores the definition of a vehicle storage lot as originally presented on January 21st. I don't need all that, do I, John? Just the okay. I would move to restore the definition of a vehicle storage lot as explained in Ordinance 2026-2.
Second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Agenda item number 5, review of the Utah Shakespeare Festival, presented by John D'Antonio and Michael Barr.
Hey.
Good morning. I'm ready to wake up.
Are you ready? We're going to have this mid-meeting. We're going to get on your feet. We won't get you singing and dancing, but we are going to do a dog and pony show. We brought all the dogs, all the ponies. I am Michael Barr, Executive Managing Director. I'm joined by John D'Antonio, our Artistic Director. And I'm super grateful for all of the support that the county provides. We have a very close relationship with Woman of the Year, Maria Twitchell, who we are very, very grateful for. Many communications all through this last year as we encountered both the interesting legislative time that we just went through, et cetera. We're just very, very grateful for the support that the county has. And we want to tell you about what's coming up. We've had a very good year last year. I hope you got a chance to see last year's season. If you didn't, you got another chance coming up this year, and John's going to tell you a little bit about our season, and then I'm going to close with things that we continue to advertise, but I don't think the Iron County residents take advantage of those amazing, great discounts that you get just because you're an Iron County resident. So grateful to tell you a little more about the season.
Morning, gentlemen. I'm John D'Antonio. Real quick introduction. I've met some of you, but just you know, been here about 2.5 years now. I was in Colorado for 10 years before running a theater there, but have absolutely loved being a part of this community. I've got 3 kids, 3, 5, and 7-year-old. In fact, we just had a play date yesterday in Parowan here all afternoon. It was a lot of fun. But yeah, we've got a really fun season coming up, so buckle up. I'm going to tell you about a lot of theater right now. It's our 65th anniversary season. We've got 8 shows playing in our 3 theaters, 3 Shakespeare plays, 1 Shakespeare adjacent, and 4 plays that have nothing at all to do with William Shakespeare. So a little something for everyone, all right? I'll start with our Engelstad Shakespeare Theater. In that Fred Adams tradition, we have a well-known comedy, a well-known tragedy, and a lesser-known work. When it ain't broke, don't fix it. So we're starting off with Hamlet, the greatest play perhaps ever written. This will be our first production of Hamlet on the Engelstad stage, probably the 11th over our 65 years, but the first on that stage. So it's going to be very, very special. Next up, a well-known romance comedy called Twelfth Night, directed by a director visionaire named John D'Antonio, so you know that's going to be good. You guys can't miss that one. And then part of our Complete the Canon commitment, where we do the lesser-known works of Shakespeare, Troilus and Cressida. This is the story of the Trojan War, so all those iconic characters, Achilles, Agamemnon, Ajax, Helen, Hector, you don't want to miss it. It's going to be epic. It's going to be fantastic. Last performed in 1999, so it's been a minute, 27 years since we've done that show. Then, in the Randall L. Jones Theater, we've got 2 musicals repping this year, which is a lot of fun. So first up, our audience has been begging us to do this for a very long time, Something Rotten. So for those who don't know, a real quick synopsis of what that's about. It's set during Elizabethan times. 2 playwright brothers who are living in the shadow of this playwright known as Shakespeare, who's hot stuff back then. And to make a name for themselves, they come up with this wild and crazy idea. They invent the very first musical. And it's 1590s, and it's an absolute riot. Shakespeare's a bit of a rock star in this world. So for anybody who loves Shakespeare, you're going to love this show. Anybody who hates Shakespeare, you're going to love this show. Our next musical is called She Loves Me. This is a classic American musical. It's set during the 1930s in a perfume shop. 2 feuding clerks there. By day, they can't stand each other. At night, they start writing to an anonymous pen pal, a Lonely Hearts Club. But of course, little do they know, they're writing to each other. They slowly discover this, and then they find their soulmates. If you ever saw that movie, You've Got Mail, it's based on this story. So great, great date night. You don't want to miss that one. And we've got Broadway talent coming out for these shows. So then we've got a farce in the 3rd slot in the Randall called See How They Run by Philip King. This is the granddaddy of all farces. Before Noises Off came along, this was the go-to show. It's set during World War II and a quiet vicarage. A newlywed couple Carol, Reverend Toop, and aspiring actress Penelope. Life is good. But then an escaped Russian POW enters into their world, dressed, disguised as a clergyman, and chaos ensues. Mistaken identities, slapstick. It's going to be directed by Jeff Kent, who did The Play That Goes Wrong 2 or 3 years ago, and that thing was a real hoot. So this guy knows farce, so you want to come out for that as well. Fun for the whole family. Then finally, in the Ames Theater, we've got two shows. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. This is a really fun take on that classic story. It's those five writers in 1816 in Geneva, Switzerland, who are trying to top each other with the best ghost story, Lord Byron, Mary Shelley. And when it's Mary Shelley's turn to tell her story, she begins telling Frankenstein, and it comes to life. So a lot of fun. Then the book club play by Karen Zacharias. This contemporary comedy is a love letter to book clubs, how we talk about these books, but really we're learning about ourselves, what we want to be, our aspirations, our relationships, and just a lot of fun. I'm trusting that every book club within a 200-mile radius will be at this show, so you don't want to miss it. Then, of course, The Green Show is back, three versions of that, a Celtic night, a Stratford night that celebrates all things Shakespeare, and then an Americana night that's celebrating our 250-year anniversary. So a lot of theater there, and, you know, I want to see you guys at everything. I know Paul Cousins made it out to Dear Jack, Dear Louise. He's not here, so I'm happy to quote him. He said, "John, that was the greatest show I've ever seen in my life. I'm going to make sure the entire commissioner, everybody, is going to be out for all 8 shows next year. We're going to work it into the budget." I said, "Are you sure, Paul?" He said, "Absolutely, we're doing that." So, hey, I'm just quoting the man, all right? So, yes. No, I think it's a well-balanced meal. You know, one show, you got to get your starter in the Randall, then your entree in the Angleston, and then dessert in the Ames. All right, cool. So any questions about those shows?
So The Green Show with the 250th anniversary, mm-hmm. Where's the schedule for that?
Yeah, so The Green Show is every night, 7 p.m. Each of those three will play twice a week, and the Americana night will be Thursdays and Saturday nights at 7 p.m. for free out on the lawn. So you'll see hundreds of people there with their picnic blankets and whatnot. I'm there 3 times a week with my kiddos. They never tire of the show. So you got to come out. Yeah. Thursdays and Saturday nights for that one.
So Dear Jack, Dear Louise was life-changing. I don't have any budgetary authority. But no, that was really – I enjoyed that play. I enjoyed that play more than anything I've seen in a long time. And there was a mob of people to talk to you after, and so I left. But I had that in my heart that night. I'm glad you're here. That was, you know, we did that in conjunction with Flatiron County.
Yeah.
And the reviews were rave from the legislators and everybody else. That was very much appreciated, that special edition of that show.
Anytime you're looking for any collaboration like that, Maria knows us already, and we do this frequently. The city calls upon us as we're rolling out the red carpet and all that type of stuff. And it was a beautiful night, and that specific play. And that play was not originally part of the season. I mean, I think you and I had had...
No, we had that conversation, before. Yeah. That
was... I think it did multiple things for us. First of all, an incredible play and very moving, and we have people still coming, "Hey, when are you going to do that again?" I think it was a great opportunity for people to see John, an introduction to John. He's been here 2 years, but did great stuff for us too. The same deals we had last year are here this year. We've got, half off. As Iron County residents, you walk up to the ticket office, half off, you prove that you're from Iron County, we've got you on file already. I mean, so come up and you can get those. We also have another incredible deal, which is better than the half off, which is the Iron County deal, where you can get 6 tickets for $200. You can't get that anywhere. You can't get them on the Wasatch Front. You can't get that at Tuacon. You can't get that anywhere. That's our friends and neighbors who have that. And we used to be afraid of that. We wouldn't tell people about it because we were afraid. When you go to Disneyland, there are advantages for residents who live in Disneyland. When you go to Vegas, there are advantages. Maria gets very frustrated when we give away half-price tickets because the value that's happening on our stages is a lot more than what we're even paying regular prices. Correct? Yeah. She knows what good theater looks like. But for Iron County residents, take advantage of that. So when he says go to all 8, yeah, go to all 8. We did a presentation in Vegas last week, and someone said, "If there were one, well, what one of all of our children would you like us to?" But there If you ever say, hey, I want to know what one I should take my family to, there are so many in this season that you can take the whole family to. Just amazing. So,
well, and dear Jack, dear Louise, I'm going to go back to that for this long. There was some amazing chemistry between the actor and actress that was, you know, you don't see that onstage chemistry everywhere. It was lovely.
Who was that girl?
Yeah, well, when you're married to someone for 12 or 13 years, yeah, that helps a little bit. Yeah, no, that was my wife, Caitlin, and I. And, man, that show is near and dear to our hearts. It's very special in many ways. Both my grandfathers fought in the war. And so just to be able to step into those shoes empathetically and be a part of that was really special.
You're not going to see him. He's directing this year. He's not going to be on stage, but you're going to see her again. She's going to be on stage again. Don't miss 12th Night. There's a beautiful opening. And I think sometimes the reason we do these things is to give the little nudge to, hey, we don't want to miss that. That show is going to open with a really cool effect. And she... we can say this. She is going to go ahead.
There's a shipwreck at the start of that show, and oftentimes, like Shakespeare, you just talk about it. But I was like, well, wait, what if we see a little bit of this? And so we're going to bring that shipwreck to life, but we're going to do it in a very theatrical way. A blue silk is going to drop from the ceiling, and then she's going to climb that silk, and she's going to dance in midair, and it will represent after Viola goes overboard and she's struggling to stay alive in the ocean. It'll represent that struggle, that drowning, that trying to survive, and it'll be a pretty cool moment, I think. I come from a family that is not a theater family. They are intimidated by Shakespeare, so I believe Shakespeare's for everyone, and I always think of my family when I'm creating a show. So I don't know if you guys ever feel that way. I certainly do half the time with this brilliant man. But I encourage you to come to 12th Night. I guarantee it will land and it will resonate for you.
Cool. Thank you.
Cool.
Appreciate support, et cetera.
Thank you very much. All right. Now we'll move on to review and possible approval of legal services agreement between UAC and Iron County and review of professional services fee.
I believe Sam was going to speak to this. Unless you need me to.
Yes. Commissioners, you may recall last year as Eric Clark was departing Washington County and going to UAC as one of their attorneys, he had proposed the idea, hey, would your county be interested in paying into UAC to receive services from UAC, essentially allowing Eric to be kind of an on-tap attorney, similar to USIP, but his focus is more on civil. An example of something that has come up recently is John is a party in the election case seeking to overturn Prop 4 or to, anyway, pertaining to Prop 4, not overturning. Yeah. In any event, Eric is representing some of the smaller counties in that playing field. And so were you to consider this MOU, that would be a use for him there. Another situation, you may or may not be aware that there has been appeal of a zone change that the commission approved in January. That's not covered by USIP because there's not claiming any damages. We consult with USIP, of course, but this would be an opportunity for me to work with Eric on that appeal as an experienced attorney in that realm as well. So not mandatory, something that we had talked about previously, but for your consideration today, this would just be a memorialization of what we've previously discussed, and that is an MOU essentially with UAC in which we can use and abuse Eric Clark for $10,000 a year. What questions or concerns do you have?
Is this something that we've engaged in before?
Yeah. No. Well, I don't know
I think this is new, isn't it?
This is a new position that they've
created. This exact context is new, but we've engaged UAC for services like these, I believe, in the past.
I just wasn't aware of them we have. But the appeal to me, again, is just having worked with Eric previously, being able to use him. Some years you may use him. Some years you may not. It just kind of depends on what comes up. But here we are early in the year, and we already have a litany of things that we can kind of bounce off of him, and I think it'd be worthwhile, especially for the cost. You could expend $10,000 on any one case at a time.
In a hurry.
Like I said, we could use and abuse He might not like me saying that, but I would intend to do so.
It's an exceptionally large amount of cases for March already. So
yeah.
This is it.
You know, I don't have any questions, but that's.
Does this ring any bells, though? Do you recall talking about this last year?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure that this wasn't out of the blue. If you want more time to consider,
please feel free. But. No, I remember. And I mean, literally, that sort of a retainer is for as much as we use that as smoke and deal.
Still can't get him to spell my name right.
It's fine. So I would move for approval of the legal services agreement between UAC and Iron County for review of professional services in the amount of $10,000.
I'd second that motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We'll move on to number 7, ratification and discussion of a 2026 contract for the public defenders. Jeff Slack, Ryan Nielsen, Krista Nielsen, Mark Barlow, and adopting public defender contract for new attorney Ron Noyes, presented by Candace Reed.
Good morning. Good
morning.
I haven't had the pleasure to speak in front of you or meet Commissioner Robinson, but my role is the administrative public defender, so I oversee this department. It does run differently than other county departments because we are independent contractors. What I seek to do today is get 4 contracts ratified, which are public defenders that have been working for Iron County, and we just extended their contracts in January 2026 to run the calendar year. And so we just need to have your signature if we could on those contracts. The other public defenders that we contract with are on a different cycle, and there's reasons for that. They're funding and it runs on a different cycle, so we structure it a little bit differently. So okay. I may be here again in January for a portion of the contractors, and then I may appear back in June asking for a similar thing, and I can explain later on a later date why that's so. But at any rate, that's what I seek to do with the 4 existing contract holders. But we do have a new one, which is Ron Noyes, and he's replacing Rick Smith. And so I have his contract, which I just need your signature on as well. I have it approved by the county attorney. They're aware of all the going-ons. I make sure to include them, so I do have that signature. The only error that I have is I had included Paul, so if you could just write your – or if I could get your signature instead. So. Any questions?
Just for the record, what is the amount on those contracts?
Just a ratification.
Just a ratification.
Yeah. So,
do you have it handy? Or?
Yeah. Well, I have their contracts right here. So for Mark Barlow, that would be $98,500 annually. May I approach? Is that okay?
I don't think I'm a judge. Can I hold you in contempt?
Take my cell phone if you're going to do that. Let me have a complete hiatus.
So I'd move to approve to ratify the 2026 contracts for the public defenders, Jeff Slack, Ryan Nielsen, Krista Nelson, Mark Barlow, and the new guy, Ron Noyes.
Second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
And then for Ryan Nelson's contract, his is also $98,500, and that's annually. Then we have Jeff Slack. His is $93,500 annually. Krista Nelson is $118,500 annually. And then raw noise is 90 annually.
Could you make sure that my office gets copies of all that?
Yep, that's where they're headed right now.
Great.
Guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 8, discussion and possible approval of an MOU with Southwest Technical College and Iron County for medical response, presented by George.
Good morning, commissioners.
Morning.
So the MOU that I'm asking you to look at this morning, a little background, as far as EMS services, the county holds the license for EMS services, and Gold Cross operates under our license, as does EMS in all counties. And Southwest Tech is asking for permission initially to perform EMS services on their campus. Ultimately, they'd like to branch out and provide entry EMS services for active shooter events. Gold Cross will not send their personnel into an actual event to bring out victims, and they're saying that they would like to do that. Right now, this MOU is covering just being able to provide services on their own campus. In conjunction with Gold Cross, they will not transport, and they will not do anything above their scope of practice. They've already, and we've all talked to Gold Cross. Gold Cross is in agreement. It doesn't in any way affect Gold Cross's transport, because they're not going to transport. I've had Sam look at it. Sam's okay with it. Commissioner Blake and I both looked at it. We're okay with it. The sheriff has looked at, and they've talked with him about their ultimate aim, which is the entry teams with SWAT, and that's something to be worked out later. But right now, they're just asking to be able to provide EMS services on their own campus.
Yeah, I've met with Crispin, the ringleader of this, who's instructor in the paramedic program there. I've met with Mike Moffitt and had that discussion. I don't see any reason not to have this MOU in place. We don't really have much to do with it. All those, you know, other entities will work together among themselves to coordinate how that response is and exactly what their responsibilities are. So.
The only time it will become problematic is if they since they're operating technically, even though they're operating under the supervision of Gold Cross. Gold Cross is operating under our license. If they violate their scope of practice in any way, that goes against our license, and so at that point we'd have to pull this MOU. But other than that, as long as they're doing what they should be doing, we're good.
Yes.
And you're watching that.
Huh?
You're watching that?
Yes.
George is like a hawk.
Very good.
I'd move for approval of the MOU with Southwest Technical College in Iron County for medical response.
Second that. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Item number 9 is discussion and possible deferral of property taxes on APN A-941-3, presented by John.
Okay, this is another property deferral. I think I'm going to maybe recommend something different on this one. This individual is 81 years old. They've helped their daughter with a lung transplant, and they have some mental illness issues. So it's a little bit unique. They're behind on their taxes, but they actually qualify for a full abatement, but they failed due to the mental health challenges in this daughter situation to apply. And so up till 2019, they had received the abatement And then last year they received the abatement as well. They have a very minimal income with Social Security and a pension from a former spouse. And so in visiting with the person, I said, hey, you know, you're gonna need to pay this back, and the total owing is $7,489.46. And so I said, that's going to work out to about $662 a month, and that was about a quarter of all their income. And so they said, well, I'll get a job. And I thought, well, yeah, but you're... Anyway, this has been a hard one for me. I've only recommended this one other time, and I think I visited with Sam about this in the concern for precedent. We need to be fair to all the taxpayers, and we need to, I think it's important that the commissioners are able to show some compassion. And so what I'm recommending is that you consider forgiveness of the taxes, given that they only owe taxes because they failed to apply for the abatement due to these problems in their life. In the past, when we've done this, it has been only the taxes, and so they would still owe the penalties and interest if that's what you chose to do. That's about all I have. Sam, did you have anything else to add? Okay, I don't see Nicole.
Oh, and I've talked with both Nicole and John kind of at length on this one.
This one's a tough one.
You know, I feel they... What's the word I'm looking for, John?
I'm not sure what you're going for.
They qualified for the abatement.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some...
Before, during, and after.
Before, during, and after. There were just some extreme circumstances with health issues that the abatement application wasn't the foremost thing on their mind. I would be in support just looking at the overall circumstances. Again, I think if, you know, we make decisions like this, it can't be a blanket decision. It has to be case by case, and it has to be pretty compelling. But
well, and Sam put it pretty well, because I was worried about setting precedent, even suggesting this to you all. And he's like, well, yeah, but if you have an 81-year-old in this situation with those mental health problems and those personal life challenges, then yeah, maybe that is a precedent in that case. So that made me feel a little bit better in couching it that way. That's a tough one.
Sure.
And I will say I'm always going to be the softy in the room. So,
is there a mechanism to help with the abatement to make sure that we're not back in the same situation later on?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we've already had conversations with Michaela and... This individual is already on Michaela's list for this year's abatement, and kind of flagged to make sure that it doesn't get missed as time goes on. When the time comes to be able to apply, and if the time comes where we're going to miss the application date, my understanding, Luke, is that Michaela's got her radar. She's got her ears up on this one. Yeah, Michaela handles those applications I'm talking as if everybody knows what's going on, but Michaela works in Luke's office. She's one of his deputies, and she handles the abatement application process, and she's very good to follow through. So that's a good question. We can only do everything that we can on this end, but the individual in my conversations with them over the last few weeks seems to be doing pretty good right now. So as far as being on top of things.
Do you have any further comments or questions? I'd entertain a motion then.
I would move for a deferral of property taxes on APN A-941-3.
Second that motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Agenda item number 10 is discussion and possible approval of an MOU with Southwestern Heritage Association for acceptance of a steel building. John, do you have that?
Yeah.
Or who's?
I think, and Sam drafted this.
Sam, do you want to take it?
For our MOU?
Or do you want me to?
Either one.
That's fine. I mean, it's fairly succinct, straightforward. You can kind of read the purpose there again. We're trying to address this building that is being donated. We're giving a pretty strict timeline on how we accept that, and it allows the county to take appropriate action to divest ourselves of this contribution if our conditions are not met. So that includes things like making sure that we have approved plans that we're ready to handle. And if at the end of this we're still not satisfied, we can just give notice saying you have 90 days to remove this from our custody, otherwise we'll deal with it as we deem appropriate. I just wanted to get the commission's input on this, see if you had any other concerns. It is
6 months, okay.
Yeah. And again, that's just for getting plans. We're not saying you have to have it done in 6 months, but we need to be ready to accept it or not within 6 months. And that gives a pretty nice timeline for the SWHA to really put pen to paper to make good on a lot of the things that they've been saying. We are certainly grateful, I think, for the opportunity to receive the building if we can use it. But if not, it'll just need to go a different direction. And I believe this agreement will allow us to do that. And we would be requiring SWHA to sign off on this before we even contingently accept it. Otherwise, we can just give notice now and say, go ahead and get rid of that. Any other questions or concerns? I know that Colonel's been super involved, but I haven't heard from him on this particular MOU.
Okay.
I don't know, Commissioner, if you want to give any background for the public on what this is about.
So this is a building that Colonel Matheson and the SWHA is proposing to donate to the building to put down at the county fairgrounds for storage of artifacts and items that are stored currently at the, what's it called, the one across the street from Brad's.
Frontier Homestead.
Yeah, from Frontier Homestead. So it's a 53-by-80 building. And the purchases have been made. The building's been delivered. There is contingency money in there to finish the construction of the said building. And he said, here's your building. It's for you to use at your pleasure, with the caveat of storing their items additionally. So.
And so what's been delivered so far?
Building.
The whole thing's there?
Minus the insulation.
Okay.
And doors. There were no doors. We didn't unload any doors.
Okay.
So, but his attitude was, here's your building, do what you want with it. He has additional money for concrete and construction of the building.
Okay.
So,
Would move to approve the MOU with Southwestern Heritage Association for acceptance of the steel building.
Second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Jennifer.
Oh.
I just want to clarify on the property that's going to tax sale. You said defer the taxes.
Oh, and I had a question about that when I said it, and
they
then
would
we
still
moved
have
on.
To pay when
good
she.
Good catch. I didn't.
No,
catch that.
Okay. I questioned.
I just wanted to.
Yeah, I questioned that. Oh. Sorry,
just
I questioned it, and then we moved on, and I got thank my you. Mind switched. No, so can we revisit that?
Yeah, it's not up to me.
Because I caught that in my mind, and then we moved on. Thank you, Nicole.
We'll go back to item number 9 then.
So I would amend my. I would amend my motion to approve.
And in fact, before you do.
What's the technical term?
Well, John? It's forgive, but let's actually clarify.
The amount?
Yeah. And I don't know if you want to do like the commission did in the past, which is to say, you forgive the taxes but not the penalties and interest.
Penalties and fees.
What are
and let me do some quick math.
Cole, talk to us.
You forgive the tax, the penalty and interest goes away.
Oh.
When we take those amounts off, yes, then there's nothing to penalize or
okay. So you don't really have that option.
Remind me of the remind me.
Remember we talked about that.
7,000 what?
7489.46 7489.46
All right. I'm glad Nicole said that because as it came out of my mouth, it wasn't right. But then we moved on. So I'm going to amend my motion to forgive property taxes on APN A-941-3 in the amount of $7,489.46.
Second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, Jennifer. You need an oxygen tank?
Thank you.
I'm going to try really hard to do this quickly. Thank you. First, I'll present items 1 through 8 for your consideration before turning over my time for 9. In the attorney's office, Joseph Massey has completed all tasks and requirements to receive a promotion from a full-time deputy attorney 1 to a full-time deputy attorney 2 effective March 1st, 2026. Items 2A through D in the Sheriff's Office Patrol, Mitch Fry was selected from the most recent competitive recruiting and selection process to backfill the vacant full-time Deputy 1 position effective March 2nd, 2026. Mary Gillens was selected from the most recent competitive recruiting and selection process to backfill the vacant part-time Administrative Assistant position effective March 2nd, 2026. Mary Mankey and Tristan Roman have completed all tasks and requirements to receive a promotion to a K-9 Deputy. Mary from Deputy 3 to K-9 Deputy 3 and Tristan from Deputy 1 to K-9 Deputy 1, effective March 15, 2026. Items 3A through E in the Sheriff's Office Corrections, Tanner Judd was selected from the most recent competitive recruiting and selection process to backfill the vacant full-time Deputy 1 position effective March 1st, 2026. Olivia McLean has completed all tasks and requirements to receive a promotion from a full-time Deputy 1 to a full-time Deputy 1 medical technician effective February 15, 2026. Tanner McIntosh has completed all tasks and requirements to receive a promotion from a full-time Deputy 1 to a full-time Deputy 2 effective March 15, 2026. Mitchell Quartz was selected from an internal process to receive a promotion from a full-time Deputy 3 to a full-time maintenance Deputy 3 effective February 15, 2026. Michael Meekham has completed all tasks and requirements to receive a promotion from a full-time Deputy 1 to a full-time K-9 Deputy 1, effective March 15, 2026. In the Road Department, Matt Baxter was selected from the most recent competitive recruiting and selection process to backfill the vacant full-time road technician position, effective February 17, 2026.
Back to landfill.
Did you skip 4 on purpose?
In the landfill, there we go. I apologize. In the landfill, Morgan Bess has completed all tasks and requirements to receive a promotion from full-time landfill technician 1 to full-time landfill technician 2, effective March 1st, 2026. Items 6A through C in the weed department, Tressa Douglas, Makila Rember, and Bryson Cragen were selected from the most recent competitive recruiting and selection process to backfill the vacant part-time seasonal weed technician positions, Tressa on February 17th, 2026, and Makila and Bryson on March 30th of 2026. In the Council on Aging Department, Christine Larson was selected from the most recent competitive recruiting and selection process to backfill the part-time assistant cook position, effective March 2nd, 2026. And in the Fair Department, Piper Menell, was selected from the most recent competitive recruiting and selection process to backfill the vacant part-time administrative assistant marketing position, effective March 2nd, 2026. Did I get them all?
I think I followed along, and I think you got it.
I think you knocked it out of the park.
Sweet.
I would move to approve items 1 through 8 as presented by Jennifer.
Second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Perfect. Thank you. And the last item on the agenda, I'll be turning my time over to Sheriff Carpenter and Lieutenant Peterson to present their needs for their department.
What am I supposed to do with this?
Sign them.
You're going to sign forever.
Is it right here?
That bottom one. Yeah.
Just write your name a whole lot of times.
Well, good morning again.
Morning.
Morning.
Sean came to me here a couple weeks ago with a proposal to try to add 2 additional corporals to the Sheriff's Office, one over our drug court program, which is growing and that is continuing to have more and more responsibility. And as we go into the future, is we're going to end up needing to put more people there. And then as a canine coordinator, as our canine program is growing, and we've got more and more responsibilities there. So I want to let Sean talk to it and speak about that. But I think that these are things that are really relatively low cost to the county, and we can probably pay for out of our current budget without any modifications. But I think in the long run is going to help in the supervision of what we're doing in the Sheriff's Office. So I'll let Sean speak to that.
Good morning. So I did send you an email in regards to all the details that gets into the weeds on that. But just to clarify, these aren't two like new deputy positions. This is just rolling the existing positions where they max out at deputy three, allowing them to move up to a corporal in that level. So it would be the associated pay increase. It's not adding new personnel or new equipment or anything like that. Our canines, we'll start there. He currently oversees five dogs, four on the road and one in the jail. With that, they're required to train 8 hours for the dual purpose dogs. We have one dog team that does train 12 hours, but that's every single week. The canine coordinator is responsible to go in and manage all of their training records, making sure that they're accurate and complete, their deployment records, making sure that those are accurate and complete, that they're ready to go to court on any of the cases. They're responsible for being able to train the dogs in-house, which is something that is unique to the county right now. We just finished up our drug detector dog school, which he oversaw the training of that. We're currently going through a patrol school. We offer that to basically all agencies in the southern region, because otherwise we'd have to send everybody up to the academy, which costs a lot of money to have people traveling and time. And so the coordinator, the way we've had it the last several years, is the coordinator is able to run basically an in-house academy where they can do all of the training in-house. But it requires so much more training and certification to get to these levels that by the time a coordinator achieves that, they're looking to promote, you know, to catch up that next grade and to go, because they're already carrying so much responsibility that as a deputy that they want to go on. So we lose so much experience in our canine world by not having rank there, that by doing this we'll keep somebody in there so that we have a subject matter expert to teach all new and incoming canine handlers and kind of keep, you know, a constant within our canine division. As far as drug court, we took on the 24/7 program last year, which is a sobriety program with alcohol related charges. Deputy Teeples has taken that on. They're continuing to push more and more people into drug court, and so she's having to manage all of these different people. And since she is the only tracker right now, she has to find people to stand in for her when she goes on vacation or goes out on sick, and then she's responsible for going back and checking to make sure all the stuff that they did was correct and accurate. And so she just carries a lot with it. I know we're working to broaden our drug court program to get a couple more trackers in there because it's an obvious need with a lot of what's going on. They had a meeting just last week with the county attorney's office, the judge, and our jail about needing more help within the drug court program so they can allow more people in. So this is kind of that first step to open that up to its own division. So
I have no questions.
Just throwing a little bit. I just got back from the Western State Sheriff's Conference. One of the vendors there was a Scram company, which does the ankle monitors for the 24/7 sobriety. And it was kind of interesting because when she saw, Iron County, you got Anna Teeples. And, you know, she was very, very complimentary about how Deputy Teeples is run. That program and all the work that she's done, you know, that's pretty impressive when you think that this is a nationwide program and a vendor recognizes our deputy here locally because of the quality program that she's running and how effectively that she's made it. And again, talking about the canines, I mean, that canines are a huge force multiplier for us. They do so much, and not just in our county, but regionally, you know, with the explosive detection dogs, and even our patrol dogs were just up in Beaver last week on this still that Beaver had going on up there. You know, it's important for the safety and security of the entire region, but it brings in some additional workload, and, you know, these deputies, I believe, are very worthy of and deserving of promotion to corporal, and I think that goes a long way to, again, supervise these programs, but to keep these deputies in place and be able to reward them for the good work. So thank you for your consideration.
I think, you know, over the years in my law enforcement career, having, you know, worked in special units and such, I think that rank actually adds a layer of protection as far as liability to the department, because these people, you know, Anna especially, you know, works independently a lot, and to give her the recognition of some rank, so when that she makes some independent decisions, you know, there's that, I think that's just some extra liability cover to fall back on the canines as well. They, you know, when they get deployed, a lot of times it's only the canine that gets deployed. I think it's helpful to have some rank, just so it lends credibility, and I think it also adds a layer of protection and liability. I think it's good.
Thank you.
So I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve increasing the patrol corporal leadership structure as outlined by the sheriff and lieutenant.
Second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anything from county boards?
Yes. John handed me two pages. Thank you very much. No, these are all, so just a couple, and these are things that we've all discussed before, so this isn't going to be anything new. But the Ion County Economic Opportunity Advisory Board, which is the board that reviews grant applications and such from the state for small business. Let me just read those into record of what constitutes that board. Luke Little, Molly Halterman, Amy Graff, Jeffrey Chestnut, James Molyneux.
Jeffrey Chestnut, he's gone, right?
Yeah, but he's now on there as a private representative.
That's right.
Joni Anderson, Brett Hauser, Waldo Galan, and Jacob Miner constitute that Economic Opportunity Advisory Board. The other Economic Development Board, Cedar City and Iron County Economic Development Committee, would consist of Steve Nelson, Waldo Galan, Ben Johnson, myself, Spencer Jones, and Joni Anderson. Correct, John?
Yeah.
And then on the Escalante Valley Housing Authority of Iron County, and if you remember, this is the Burl Housing.
Gardner.
This is, Marvin Clark Bracken.
Marvin Bracken.
Melvin Scott Schill, Bradley Talbot Holt, Jess Sidney Stroud, and Robert Lynn Ellsworth.
Say them again.
Robert Lynn Ellsworth would constitute that board. And then I've added one more. The Library Board. We discussed the necessity of moving a commissioner off of that board just because those boards meet on Tuesday afternoons, and until the jail's completed, all of the commissioners are tied up on other meetings during the time of this board, and we've asked that John Whitaker be appointed to that board. I tried to convince Carrie Jeffries that she needed to be a member of that board, and she threatened to murder me in no uncertain terms.
Wow.
Therefore,
I had a similar conversation with her.
Therefore, John
is afraid of you.
It's wise.
I've already contacted that board, let them know, and provided them with contact information.
They've already reached out to me.
For John, so.
I'm happy to do it.
Very good.
Do we need to?
So was that a motion?
I would move all the things that I said become reality, not just on paper.
I'd second that motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
You know, he said a lot of things over the years.
There's, all the things in the last 3 minutes.
All the things relating to boards. Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
John, you're like a genie. It's like, oh, if that's your wish.
This is what we're doing.
Look out.
All right. We'll adjourn the meeting then.
This is way, we're an hour and a half quicker than I thought we'd be.
Very impressed.